to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Friday, March 5th, 2010. Aloha and welcome to the show here. Our phone number is 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Jared's in the control room answering the phones. The webcam is running. We've got viewers already signing in. Both chat rooms are open. And in the What Really Happened chat room, apparently they've organized a Friday night What Really Happened drinking game. They're all apparently holding beers. And the rule is that every time I say taxes are Israel, they have to take a drink. So taxes, 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 Israel, 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 Israel. All right, that'll put them in a good mood for the rest of the show. Now, obviously, the big story today... The big story, they're already drunk over in the chat room. The big story today is the Pentagon shooting. And like every other news event involving an act of violence, everybody's short-stroking it. They're trying to warp it to whatever their agenda is. And Southern Poverty Law Center is saying it's the right-wing militias. And other people are saying it's the left-wing militias. And they're trying to link this guy to anybody who's into conspiracy theories and 9/11 truth. And they're just pounding on this thing as hard as they can. A lot of people are saying it's another false flag. A lot of people are saying, no, it's just another American who has reached his limit and is striking back. And at this point, it almost doesn't really care because whether this guy is a genuine case like Joe Stack who crashed his plane into the IRS, if this guy is just genuine or even if he's a setup by the government, it doesn't really matter because in the end, the government propaganda machine is going to use him for whatever they think advantage they can get. And we're seeing yesterday where they're trying to link him to the 9/11 truthers and so forth. Now, the reason I don't think this is a false flag, it's pretty much along the same lines as the Joe Stack situation. Staged false flag terror, like the bombing of the King David Hotel or the Levon affair or 9/11, okay, you've got to direct it at innocent lives, and lots of them, to maximize the shock value and the horror, like the Murrah building, and there was the daycare center where all those kids got killed. That is a hallmark of a false flag. Innocence must die. Now, in both the IRS and Pentagon cases, public opinion has little sympathy for the targets. The majority of Americans are angry with the military machine. They're angry with the IRS. They're angry with the government as a whole. So this is a poor target for a staged false flag attack. Now, false flag attacks have to have a live perpetrator, somebody you can put on trial, like Tim McVeigh, to keep fanning the public anger with, or somebody who remains at large, like Osama bin Laden, so that you can fan the flames of public outrage and build public pressure that you've got to get somebody in order to start a war. And again, in both the IRS and Pentagon cases, the perpetrators died in the act, cutting off any possibility of a revenge theater. Closure is forced on these cases before they even get going. Now, the media right now, just before showtime, they're already starting to pull away from this thing about 9/11 and truthers, and they're trying to portray him as mentally unbalanced, and his parents were warning that he was acting very strange, and he'd gotten a gun, and so forth and so on. So I think, in my opinion, that in this case, as was the case with Joe Stack, that this was just another American who has reached his limit. And we're going to see more of them, sadly, unfortunately. But again, in the long run, it doesn't really matter. The U.S. government propaganda machine is going to pound on it for all it's worth and, see what traction they can get out of it, because that's the way they operate. And I want to remind everybody, if you go back and you study the history of the American Revolution, long before the Boston Massacre, there were already these little isolated incidents of violence where the colonials and the patriots were shooting the odd British soldier that they caught unawares. That's why the British panicked during the Boston Massacre. They were already well aware that their comrades were being shot and killed by those uppity colonials. And I think we're kind of in that same phase here. And I am still very much of the opinion that the incident at Fort Hood may have involved a mutiny or an uprising. And rather than allow that to get out, they just said, okay, well, we'll blame this Muslim guy and say it was an act of terror and so forth and so on. We do know that we absolutely cannot trust the U.S. government version on anything that is coming down the pipe here. So we need to be very skeptical. And, you know, the other situation here is, you know, they're trying to say, oh, well, you know, he doubted the official story of 9/11, and they were trying to, like, do a linkage there. But at this point, if you look at the polls, the overwhelming majority of the American people think the government is lying about 9/11. The rest of the world is completely convinced that the U.S. government is lying about 9/11. If somebody runs a red light and gets a ticket, they'll be able to link them to doubting 9/11, just out of sheer numerical odds on the situation. The only people still swearing undying fealty to the official story are people getting a government paycheck here. Now, one of the little onerous bits of propaganda that we saw was an article that came out of Mother Jones, of all places, called Oath Keepers in the Age of Treason. And it starts out talking about how the Oath Keepers are arming themselves with 50 caliber Bushmaster bolt-action sniper rifles against the day that the U.S. government is going to declare martial law. So this, to me, I'm really surprised Mother Jones put this out there, because this is obviously the start of a propaganda push to portray anybody who disagrees with the government as a crazed, dangerous, gun-toting, domestic terrorist. I don't think they're going to get any traction with it, but that seems to be the next step. The government has lost its credibility, and the only way they're going to be able to keep the situation from deteriorating is to make everybody who doubts the government to shut the heck up again. And the warnings about reading our emails and listening to our phone calls and looting our computers have not discouraged Americans from talking to each other. And the more Americans talk with each other, the more they become aware that they are not alone in their doubting of the official story of everything. The more you speak out, the more you give courage to others around you to speak out. And it's really beginning to take off. And the government can't trick you into going back to being silent. So the next inevitable stage on the path to tyranny is they're going to have to just terrorize you into staying silent. If you speak out, oh, you're a terrorist, we're going to slap you in jail and we're going to, you know, waterboard you and do all these other terrible things because you're a domestic terrorist. And we've already heard people within the government saying that if you're accused of terrorism, your civil rights can be suspended because it's a national emergency. And we already know, we've already been shown what our government is doing to people it views as enemies. But see, here's the problem. They can't declare everybody who doesn't trust the government or is angry with the government to be a domestic enemy, because that's the majority. We're getting into a situation where the government sees itself as surrounded by 300 million enemies within our own borders. Talk about a foxhole mentality. Or organized paranoia. And remember, when sociopaths are no longer able to get their way, they inevitably become clinically paranoid. And I think we're beginning to see that right here. So we're, you know, and of course, over at the U.S. Supreme Court, they were hearing a lawsuit challenging the city's handgun ban. How convenient for the gun grabbers. There was a shooting just down at the Pentagon. I don't know if it's going to impact the justices who so far are standing firm on the Second Amendment. But it is rather amazing how often that whenever there's an anti-gun case in the courts or legislature, that there does seem to be a convenient gun atrocity with which to fan the flames of an anti-gun hysteria. All right, turning to the economy here, the news again is bad. You know, you probably saw the media is just having total orgasms over the fact that the Dow and the NASDAQ went soaring and it was really incredibly up there. And they're saying it's because of this wonderful jobs report that came out this week. The problem is the jobs report, the official U.S. government jobs report, said that the rate of job loss has slowed. They're not saying jobs are being created, people aren't getting hired. They're saying not as many people are getting fired as had been happening. So we're sinking into the ocean a little bit slower than we were before. There's two problems with that. First of all, as the number of employed continues to decline, there are fewer and fewer jobs to be lost. Sooner or later, you reach that point where you can't let anybody go or you're out of business and shutting down. Which is happening. We're seeing an epidemic of mass layoffs. The other situation is that the government reports are known to be fudged because they are not counting people who've run off their unemployment benefits, which a large number of people have done right now. So the report is completely bogus, and yet the stock market said, yee-haw, we're going to be rich. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
listening to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the economy, and we're talking about this official U.S. government report about the unemployment that has sparked this stock market surge today. There's another aspect of that report that people keep forgetting, and that is that the jobs report from the Labor Department does not mention or even allow for all the people who have lost high-paying jobs and are taking low-paying jobs. And that is invisible in this official U.S. government report. And so the stock market, they're getting drunk on the smell of somebody else's cork, as Mark Twain used to say. And they're out there buying stocks because, oh, yee-haw, it's a little bit of good. And what they really said is, even as good as the report claims to be, what they're saying is, we're not sinking quite as fast as we were before. I don't think that's a reason to go out and be throwing a party hat. Now, the reality is looking out there. We've been talking about the state budget shortfalls. Florida's budget gap, $3.2 billion. North Carolina tax collections, down $35 million as consumers cut spending. Idaho tax revenue, $41 million below the original estimates. The bottom line here is that all of these states have been relying on the federal government's economic and labor statistics to calculate what their own revenues are going to be. And they are consistently coming up short because the government's official reports are not accurate. They are propaganda. They are spin. The government is trying to convince you that things are really better than they are. They even admitted 3-4 weeks ago, we covered it here on the show, their strategy is to conceal the problem from ordinary Americans and try and cheer you into going back to the stores and spending more money to reignite the economy. That's their entire plan. That is the entire plan of the federal government, is to hide the problem and say, yeah, go on, spend money. See, everything's going to be fine here. And what they're not really dealing with is the fact we don't have money to spend. We don't want to borrow anymore. We're trying to get out of debt. We don't have any money to spend because the jobs went away to other countries. Okay, and that's just the bottom line there. January foreclosures hit a record high. The problem is not going away. We're going into another real estate crash between the commercial real estate, which is part of what the federal government is trying to hide from the public. And now we're hearing, we were seeing Barney Frank up on the news talking about why Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac may have to go away because they're broke. It's all coming apart. It's grinding to a halt. Every single state in the year 2009, all 50 states, saw major increases in unemployment. Nobody was spared. Nobody was spared at all. Now, turning to the federal government itself, a couple of little pieces of news that are rather interesting to look at. As we reported the other day, federal workers are being paid more than private employees for similar work. We've commented on that many times. One of the reasons why federal employees are so loyal to the federal government is not because the federal government is right or moral or honorable. It's because these federal workers understand if they lose their government job and go to the private sector and do the same job, they're going to take about a 25 to 30% pay cut. And that is kind of a known situation. The federal government overpays its employees, even though the service is lousy, but they overpay them because they're literally bribing them for loyalty. They're buying their support, and it's the old story. Those who rob Peter to pay Paul can always count on the support of Paul. Hitler did the same thing in Nazi Germany. Got a bunch of real losers who could never have gone anywhere on their own and made them all top officials in the Nazi Party, so he knew he could count on their unqualified support no matter what nonsense he did. Now, interestingly enough, the reason I brought that up, because we reported on it yesterday, there's another story confirming it today at whatreallyhappened.com. The reason I brought it up, yesterday we were mentioning about the fact that there are 678 congressional staff members working in Capitol Hill, 678, it's a lot of people, who have not paid their taxes according to the Internal Revenue Service. And there was a proposal to put a bill through Congress saying that you will have to have your taxes up to date in order to work on Capitol Hill. Today, that legislation was pulled from the House committee markup. Just threw it in the trash. Gone completely. And I know a lot of people are out there saying, well, you know, it just goes to show how corrupt the system is, where taxes are something for we, the slaves, to pay. And the government from Tim Geithner on down, they're basically getting a free ride. They don't have to pay taxes. They don't have to do their paperwork. That may be one interpretation. My other interpretation is that they can't find anybody who isn't in trouble with the Internal Revenue Service to hire. Look at all those commercials all over the TV for tax resolution services. Everybody is in trouble with the Internal Revenue Service. Everybody is in trouble. It's become the majority position to be in trouble, to be behind on your taxes. And that's another reason the state finances are coming up short. You know, the state can sit there and say, you owe XYZ taxes, okay? And that's all well and good, but if people don't have it, they don't have it. And that is really the situation that we're in. We're down to a situation in this country where people are having to choose between a quarterly tax payment and their mortgage payment. And they can be understood for saying, I got to keep my house and my mortgage, and I'm just going to have to pay the penalties and the late interest and everything on the federal taxes. And it keeps piling up and piling up. Why? Because the federal government, in their infinite wisdom, gave corporations tax credits to ship high-paying jobs to other countries. That's the reason we're in the mess that we're in. We were put between the rock and the hard place. The jobs were taken away. The debt and taxes piled on. It is a no-win situation. We are heading for a crash. I don't know if it's intentional or if it's simply what happens when you have a bunch of sociopaths in charge of the government. But the end result is going to be the same. It's going to be a crash. Now, interestingly enough, the 2009 financial report, this is an official U.S. government report that has come out, and we can assume that it has been spun as positively as possible, but even this one is saying the current economic trends are unsustainable. That's their word. In other words, the U.S. government and the American economy are cooked. There is no way to save it, and I've been saying for this last year on the radio, I'm not seeing the government even trying to save it. Basically, everything is, let's loot the people, put it in our pocket, and head for the doors. The last official act of any government is to loot the nation. I think that's what we're seeing right now. Now, one possible interesting development along this whole thing, because in my opinion, this whole health care reform situation is all about finding ways to take more money from the people. And President Obama is going to make sure that we all have health insurance by ordering us to go out and buy health care insurance from the insurance companies that were huge campaign donors during his campaign. But Virginia has just passed a state legislation that prohibits the federal government from forcing its citizens to purchase government-approved health insurance. This is going to be another states' rights issue. A fight over whether the federal government or whether the state has jurisdiction within that state itself. Shades of the Civil War and secession looming on the horizon. All right, we're going to take a break for commercials. Join us on the air, 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933. We'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Oscar in Honolulu. Aloha, brah. What's up?
Aloha. I was wondering, you know, in face of all this bad news that you're telling us, what does one do when one is faced with... what would you say, the street alternative? You can't pay the rent anymore, and you can't handle all of this stuff, and you're on the street. I've heard that here on the island of Oahu that there are a couple of places which to me sound kind of like camps. And I was wondering if you'd heard any or checked any, you know, about any of these kind of places to know whether it's a good place to go or a bad place to go or dangerous or what.
Well, unfortunately, ultimately, they're all dangerous, and I am not an expert on this, and unfortunately, I know that a lot of the social services places that we're dealing with this have had their budgets cut by Linda Lingle. I know that all the little homeless enclaves that used to be down in Honolulu and toward Waikiki got cleared out because they were bad for tourism. And I know all along the beaches on the leeward side, there's all sorts of encampments. I understand that there's a community that's forming up in the Helamanu area in the middle of the island, and that one's so remote even the state workers won't go up there because they consider it to be too dangerous. And the reality is nobody knows how bad the homeless problem is on this island. And it's just absolutely sickening that a nation with our wealth and resources can spend so much on bombs and bullets and invading other countries and has nothing left over for the people during this time of extreme need. And it does seem that it doesn't matter what party we're talking about. They're all sociopaths. They are incapable of feeling the pain they're inflicting on the rest of the country in their quest for greater riches and greater glory and whatever else it is that the voices in their head are telling them. And, you know, the homelessness, it is a huge, huge problem on this island. And one of the problems about being on an island like Hawaii is if you hit the end of your money, you don't even have the money to leave. You're here. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have such a homeless problem on this island. There is a food rescue operation that started up. I'm trying to think of its name. And I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. But, yeah, it's a real problem.
Tell me how would one get in touch with you to get you inside information on these places? I was in town on Saturday, and I ran into a couple of old friends of mine who were on the street, and they claimed to have been to some of these places, and the stories were pretty horrendous.
Well,
and
you
I thought you might like to hear some of them.
Well, you could email them to WRH@whatreallyhappened.com, and I will definitely look into them. Because I'm working right now with a former minister who's trying to produce a documentary on the homeless situation around here, and she's directing, and I'm providing post on the project, and this might be material that we could use. It's a horrendous thing. It's like that old Billy Joel song, Another Day in Paradise. We're seeing that in front of us every single day here, and it's really ugly, and it's accelerating. Forget all this talk about rebounds and whatnot. It's accelerating. More and more people are losing their homes. They're losing their businesses. We have got so many boarded-up properties here and people living on the street, and it doesn't make any sense that we should have empty houses and people living on the streets because of pretty printed pieces of paper. Yeah. So, Oscar, thank you very much for the phone call. If you could email me any of that stuff, I would really appreciate that, and I will follow up, okay? All right. Aloha. Thank you very much for the phone call. Yeah, it is an ugly, ugly situation out there. We've got people, calling into the show who are calling in from homeless shelters. We were reporting yesterday about this huge tent city that has sprung up in New York. I mean, just step back for a moment and think about the absurdity of this. We have all these empty foreclosed houses, and we have people living in the woods during one of the harshest winters in recent memory. Doesn't that tell you that something has gone badly wrong with the nation as a whole? Because of the pretty printed pieces of paper and because of all the people in Wall Street who wanted to get rich off of mortgage-backed securities and credit default swaps, they got to play their little gambling games, and we, the American people, are paying for the losses. I never agreed to that. I never voted for it. Neither did you. It's not even in the Constitution. You show me where in the Constitution the government has the authority to take money from ordinary working Americans and shower it all over the game players in Wall Street. It isn't in there. Oscar was asking, what do you do? What you do, it's time to get angry. It is time to get very angry. And, we've got, people are running off their unemployment. We've got Congress critters like Bunning saying no more. They're just all a bunch of deadbeats. Go out and find a job. There aren't any jobs. They are not here. They're all in other countries. All the high-paying jobs were driven out of this country by misguided federal tax policy to favor corporate donors. I don't think there's a way to turn it around. I think we're heading for a crash. We just have to hunker down and survive through it. I think we're going to go through the same thing the Russian republics did. And to judge by the Russian republics, we go through, you know, we let the old government and its debts collapse. We're not responsible. Concept of odious debt. We're not responsible. We get a new government going that we set up to take care of the people. We kick out the oligarchs and the crooks and the scammers, the Madoffs and everybody just like him. We get rid of the oligarchs the same way that Putin did in Russia, and things will be better for us. We got some dark times to go through before we get there. But it is going to be better once we get free of this completely destroyed government with which we are cursed. All right, turning to another completely messed up government, Israel forces today raided the Al-Aqsa compound. Dozens of Palestinians were injured as Israeli forces entered the Al-Aqsa mosque following the Friday prayers. They basically just went in there and just started firing tear gas and rubber-coated bullets and stun grenades. Now, I am reading this as further confirmation that Israel did not get what they wanted in terms of an Iran war from Russia or China or the European Union or the United States. And so Israel's going to throw a tantrum. And just like the guy who has a terrible day at the office and he goes home and he kicks his dog, the Israelis are going to go kick the Palestinians. They're going to take out their frustrations by throwing tear gas grenade at the Gazans. That seems to be what's going on here. But I read this as Israel unable to get other people to go kill Iran for them. And it makes sense. We all know we got lied into the war in Iraq. We all know that Israel is out there cheerleading all of these wars on. And the rest of the world is just sick and tired of it all. And I know we here in the United States are sick and tired of it. We have seen these huge, huge propaganda campaigns to hype a war in Iran. They aren't getting any traction. The U.S. government has destroyed its own credibility on Iraq and 9/11 and hundreds of other similar occurrences. They can't get it back. This is a government that has lost the ability to inspire and lead the American people. All they can do is threaten to bludgeon us if we don't do as we're told. And that doesn't go over very well on the American people. But the situation at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Israel is attempting to trigger a response. This is a provocative act. They're hoping that somebody in Palestine or Gaza or the West Bank or some will respond. And then Israel can point to the response as the initiating event in a new escalation of war. We know Israel wants to go back into Lebanon. They want that Litani River. We know that Israel wants to find some way to make sure that they get to keep the Golan Heights and Syria never gets it back. We know that Israel lives and survives and controls its people by maintaining this illusion that they are at death's door. If they're not constantly attacking everybody else around them, the rest of the world is going to come in and just completely wipe Israel off the map. Ahmadinejad didn't say that. Israel keeps saying that. It's a cultural it's just like the same game they're playing here, keeping you constantly afraid of the terrorists so that you're easy to control. Israel does the same thing with the Israelis, keeps them in constant fear of the Palestinians to control them. Same game, same dodge. We're going to take a break.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Looks like the crowd in the chat room is sobering up. So taxes, 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 taxes. All right. Got an email during the break here. I misspoke. The song Another Day in Paradise is by Phil Collins. I gave credit to the wrong musician. It is a wonderful song. If you haven't heard it, you really ought to. It's probably a song that doesn't get played a lot on the radio these days for the obvious reasons. But it is out there, and you can get it on YouTube and all the rest of it. And it's one of the ones that I do keep on my cell phone all the time. And if we can get the rights clearance to it, I want to use it on this documentary that we're working on the homelessness here in Hawaii. So, anyway, getting back to some science news here. Boy, the world is just rocking and rolling. You know, I think planet Earth is like doing one of these, get off me, because we're having more and more quakes. Two more major aftershocks in Chile, greater than 6.0. We had that quake yesterday on the northern end of Chile, quite a ways away from the big one. This morning we had a 6.8 quake off the shore of Sumatra along that huge subduction zone that basically links to the remains of the Toba supervolcano. So the whole world is just kind of rocking and rolling here. And it's interesting because one of the other stories that we had yesterday, we didn't get time to, is seismologists are basically going out with newer equipment, seismometers, GPS, so forth and so on, and they're basically looking at the way the Pacific Plate is moving off the shore of America's Pacific Northwest, specifically Seattle. And they're basically saying they're finding a lot more movement than they were expecting before. And so what they're saying is the possibility of a major quake in Seattle is a lot higher than they previously thought. And I remember last week when I was talking about, or earlier this week when I was talking about how the Yellowstone magma chamber is arcing down toward the west and the subduction plate is going toward the east. And so a significant quake in that area could actually rattle the Yellowstone magma chamber, trigger more eruptions there. Well, this kind of all ties into that. Very interestingly, many, many years ago when we were forced to leave Los Angeles, my wife and I drove up the coast and we moved into this town in the Cascade Mountains in Washington State, where we figured we were going to be safe from all the people who were threatening bodily harm against us. And the first week we were there, I mean, we were joking with each other about, at least we're out of the earthquakes now. And boom, got like this 5-point-something quake. Didn't break anything, but it was like the biggest quake Washington State had in the last 50 years. And it happened just the week that we moved in there. So it's a seismically active area. We're unfortunately seeing more and more quakes around the middle of the United States where they haven't been happening before. Apparently there was a little one in Oklahoma this morning that woke a few people up. So a lot of strange things going there underneath the crust of the earth, which brings us to my next favorite subject, of course, ClimateGate. And I'm sure Al Gore is already out there trying to figure, how can I tax people and claim to prevent earthquakes? Well, you can't. You can't prevent and stop earthquakes any more than you can prevent climate change, and that's just the reality of what's going on here. Yes, we're Homo sapiens, and we have nuclear weapons, and we have technology, and we are still microscopic compared to the forces that drive the solar system and the dynamics of our planet Earth, and that's just the reality. I look at Al Gore, and I'm reminded of the Roman Emperor Caligula, who went down to the beach for a picnic and happened to arrive at low tide. And as the tide started to come in, he ordered his guards to flog the ocean to keep the tide from coming in and spoiling the picnic. And obviously it wasn't going to work, no matter how hard the Roman soldiers flogged the water. And it seems like that's what Al Gore is trying to sell to us. Give me your carbon taxes and I will stop the sun from rising and the moon from going around and the snow from falling and all the rest of it. Speaking of the snow, February was the fourth coldest February on record for Sarasota since they started keeping records in 1911. And unfortunately, Florida's agriculture is taking a double whammy because remember, the winter arrived early and killed off the bumper crops. Now spring is late in coming, and they can't get the spring plantings going in time. And they're already looking at ruined crops. Basically, they're saying, they're joking around, saying the only people wearing shorts in Florida are the tourists, because they feel it's obligatory. But they're saying the tremendous, tremendous damage to agriculture means food prices are going to go up. Now, interestingly enough, the British Meteorological Office, who had last autumn predicted a very mild winter, has decided they are going to no longer issue seasonal forecasts. They're not going to get up there and say, this will be a hot summer, this will be a cool summer, this will be a hot winter, this will be a cool winter. And this is a direct quote I want to read from you. Although we can identify general patterns of weather, the science does not exist to allow an exact forecast beyond 5 days or to absolutely promise a certain type of weather. Okay? They're basically admitting what I have been saying all along. With all of our technology, an accurate forecast of what the world is going to be doing is only possible for 2-3 days out. I don't even buy the 5-day one. Certainly not around here. And yet, these are the same people who insist that they can predict that the world is going to be 0.4 degrees warmer in 100 years, unless we pay carbon taxes. It's complete and utter nonsense here. Complete and utter nonsense. Now, interestingly enough, Dr. Phil Jones, who has recently admitted that there was no evidence of warming for the last 15 years, and has had to resign his position as head of the Hadley CRU, was testifying before a hearing in the House of Commons, basically before the Science and Technology Committee, and he basically said that the reason that Hadley CRU was refusing Freedom of Information Act requests for the raw data so that other climate scientists could double-check their forecasts and prognostications, Dr. Jones explained that other countries providing the data, like Sweden, were refusing to allow their data to be released. That was their excuse. We'd love to show you our homework, but, you know, the other countries that gave us the data said we have to keep it secret. Sweden came out today and officially announced that this is not true, that not only was Hadley CRU authorized to re-release Sweden's temperature data, but Sweden itself keeps it on a public website where anybody can go and get it. So now we've got Dr. Phil Jones in a flat-out lie to the House of Commons, trying to do a CYA on why they didn't want to have anybody else double-check their work. Well, now we know why. I mean, Dr. Jones has come out and admitted, well, yeah, there wasn't any evidence of warming. You know, we just made it up because we felt we were justified. We're fighting for a noble cause, therefore we can lie to you about global warming and so forth and so on. Meanwhile, over here in the United States, interestingly enough, you know, this push for green technology and green business, and so much of the stimulus is tied into green this and green that, and it's all turning out to be more scam. We were talking the other day about this new project to bring wind power down to Texas and how many jobs it was going to create, and then we find out the jobs it's creating are all in China because that's who's building the wind turbines. They're not being built in the United States. They're going to hire some guys to go down, drill the holes, and put in the posts and install them. But that's only 1/10 of the jobs being created by the project. The other 90% are in China building the wind turbines because China never let its manufacturing go away. They know how to make things that other people want to buy. We lost that here, and we're not going to have a good economy back until we start making things that the rest of the world wants to buy at a price they can afford to pay. And we have this double whammy of a government and a corporate culture that thinks manufacturing is something that gets their hands dirty and they don't want to be involved with it. So we'll just send it off to the third world. Plus, we're going to tax everything that moves because, hey, we need the money more than you guys do. That makes for a business climate that simply cannot survive in an open global marketplace. Our prices are too high. The quality of our products are crud. And that's why our nation is in the Al-Qaeda. We're going to take a break for news and commercials. We're going to be back here talking about, a whole bunch of stuff. So stay tuned and aloha.
Michael Rivero, What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour number two of our show today. And just for the people in the chat room, taxes, 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 Israel, 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 bomb, 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 Iran, Iran. We expanded the list of things I have to say for them to take a sip of their Friday night beer here. So, man, they can't. I don't know. The more beer they drink, the worse their keyboards can spell. It's rather amazing watching that come through here. All right, getting back here to the news, as you were hearing during the break, New York is going through a lot of political scandals. Patterson is basically bowing out of a re-election because of, pressuring. You were hearing the story. Apparently one of his aides, the girlfriend, was going to bring a domestic violence charge against him, and he tried to intervene on that. And, you know, there's some ethics issues about the World Series tickets and so forth and so on. There's wrangle there and violated some rules on accepting gifts and so forth and so on. And, of course, Massa is now getting ready to basically resign over a sexual harassment case. Now, I, for one, would like our politicians to be truly representative of the American people. And by that I mean I'd like them to behave the way I would like to imagine I would behave under similar circumstances. Unfortunately, as you get older, you realize that, you know, people tend to, you know, play by their own sets of rules. And if you really think about the larger scope of the problems facing this nation, this is all minor stuff. You know, a sexual harassment charge, you know, asking the girlfriend of your aide not to take him to court. I mean, if they were outside the business relationship, you have people who do that all the time for friends. I'm not making excuses for these guys. Okay? But my point is this really a newsworthy story? Now, in an election year, of course, we get a lot of this stuff in an effort to try and push people in and out of various campaigns or clear the decks. This goes all the way back to Richard Nixon. I found it very, very telling that they were running all the president's men on TV last night, which brings back all those memories about, you know, the U.S. government intelligence agencies being used to basically sabotage the Democratic Party so that Nixon could run against McGovern, who he knew he could beat. And we're starting to see the same thing here. But the bottom line is, as long as the media focuses on these scandals, they're not reporting on the really important things, like the homelessness, the debt, the shortfalls, the raising of taxes, the loss of jobs. Those are the things that really affect your life. I have a rule of thumb around here, and that is that news are those stories that actually affect the lives of everyday Americans. If Sarah Palin is off saying some stupid piece of nonsense that everybody titters at, that's not news. It's gossip, maybe. Belongs in the celebrity tabloids. But it's not news because it's not affecting your life. And these politicians who are being chastised by the media for these little indiscretions, and they are little indiscretions, it is being done in order to distract you from the real story. Change the focus, change the story, keep you distracted from what's really going on. Classic case, back during the Clinton administration, when the real story of the Whitewater scandal was looting the SNLs under the cover of the bailout program and government-sanctioned drug running by the Central Intelligence Agency, the whole Iran-Contra mess, and how the money from that operation reshaped American politics. But Ken Starr gave us a blue dress. Ooh, look at the blue dress. Look at the blue dress. Keeping distracted with a tawdry sex scandal. And it feels like it's happening again. Same thing in the spring of 2001. When we've documented, the U.S. government was already telling other countries around the world, in October we will invade Afghanistan because they won't sell us a pipeline right away for the price we think it's worth. So we're going to go for the low-cost option and invade. And everybody in the world knew it was happening except the Americans. Okay, because we were getting Chandra Levy and Gary Condit.
Were they having an affair?
Yeah, they were having an affair. It's Washington, D.C. There's more fooling around there than in Las Vegas, you know. So we got all Gary Condit all the time. Where is Chandra Levy? What's Gary Condit doing? You know, eye in the sky watching across the street. And we were just totally saturated with this tawdry little sex scandal that possibly had overtones of a murder. And while we were distracted with that, the U.S. government moved quietly to get ready for a major war in Afghanistan. And then, of course, on 9/11 came the terror attack, perfectly timed to anger Americans into supporting the already planned attack on Afghanistan and eventually Iraq. So now we're seeing all these stories about all the New York politics, about how they're having their problems. I'm wondering what the backstory is, or more importantly, what are we being distracted from? What are we being distracted from? And yes, sexual harassment is bad, and Massa was wrong to do it, but is it really national news? I don't think so. They're filling us full of that stuff because they want to distract from something else. During the break, I was watching one of the corporate news feeds. It was a puff piece on the iPad, or as I like to call it, the iFlop. They're trying desperately to save that thing. But again, it's advertising. It's a product ad posing as news. The real news is simply not there. I have yet to see on any of the TV American networks the story about Israel going into the Al-Aqsa Mosque and just tear gassing the people. We're not seeing that. That potentially does affect all of our lives. Because it's part of that push to a wider war in the Mideast, which is pushing us toward a new world war. That is real news. All right, we're going to move along here. Looking over at Great Britain, they're having a very, very hard time over there. Their economy is heading into really serious trouble. They may be leading the U.S. along. It seems like one after another, the European nations are starting to fall like dominoes here. The British currency, the pound, is just absolutely getting flattened, as well it should. There's no value to prop it up. It is another fiat, pretty printed pieces of paper, just like the Federal Reserve note. The price of the long-term British debt securities, the gilts, they're going down. And, of course, as more and more entities, both in Britain and the United States, are cashing in their credit default swaps, the price of those insurance policies are going up. And, of course, that price gets passed on to the cost of whoever's doing business. See, way, way back when this was just getting going, these credit default swaps were a wonderful little deal. They cost a few pennies, and you could become fabulously rich on them. And a lot of experts have equated this to like buying a fire insurance policy on your neighbor's house. And automatically, you've got an incentive to watch your neighbor's house burn down. And that was what created this crisis in the real estate market here in the United States. Why aren't any of these home loan modification programs working? Because the way the rules are set up, the banks make more money foreclosing on you. Taking your home away, hitting you with a forced loan for the unpaid balance, and anything that they don't get from you, they get back from the government, they wind up making more money. The way the rules are set up favor the banks and do not help the American people. This gets back to what I've been saying all along for the last several months. America needs leaders who put Americans first, second, and third. I don't think there's authority in the Constitution for the government to be behaving as it has been behaving. There isn't even really authority in the Constitution for a private central bank. The founding fathers went out of their way to avoid one. The bottom line is, and we have to face up to this, you and I and everybody, we have to stop living in denial. We have to stop wearing the rose-colored glasses, our official U.S. government-issued rose-colored glasses, and we have to confront the reality that the federal government has failed. We have spent our entire lives paying taxes into a system that does not work for us. All we get is more debt, a deteriorating nation, and really big, shiny bombs, which is not what we wanted. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. After these words from our sponsors, join us on the air, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. The phone lines are open. Jared is waiting for the phone calls. I think he's taking a nap. Dial in. Wake him up. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here, and we're going to go to the phones. We've got Dee in Minnesota. Aloha, Dee. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha, Mike. Well, I bet we can say the words that'll get them to drink again. I'll start. Taxes.
They're looking pretty sober. They're looking pretty sober over there. The spelling has improved just over the last commercial break.
Will they drink if I say them, or do you have to?
Yeah, go for it. Give it a try. Let's see what happens.
All right. Taxes. Israel.
Well, the spelling's going downhill.
They take money from Israel.
Yeah, the spelling's already deteriorating. I think it worked.
Cool. No, seriously, I am going to throw the bums out because they're talking value-added taxes, food taxes, and both parties take money from Israel, so I'm voting strictly independent this year.
Well, definitely you need to do that. I mean, I'm not going with either party. I mean, they're
neither
both
parts.
Anarchy is looking really good. I'm very much anti-incumbent. I think the majority of the nation is feeling the same way. The only guidance I'm giving voters is if they take money from Israel or if they stand up there and say, I'm a better friend of Israel than anybody else, vote them out.
Is there somewhere we can check to see if they are or they aren't?
Well, generally, if you put their name into a search engine and Israel right next to it, you will immediately find out if they're sucking up to Israel or not. Unfortunately, it's most of them. We've posted many lists at whatreallyhappened.com about which politicians are taking money from Israel's political action committees, but there's a lot of under-the-counter stuff going on. There are those people who've been compromised. They go to Israel and they get, you know, somebody gets some videotape of them with a young girl or something, and from then on they're completely controlled. There's all kinds of ways the game is being played. But, I mean, the reason I did not want to even deal with Sarah Palin when she was first becoming the vice president candidate under John McCain, the first photo they showed of her governor's office in Alaska, in the United States of America, and there was a flag of Israel in that office.
That's
and the
disgusting.
Instant I saw that, I said, I am not ever going to support this person because her priorities are screwed up.
Yeah. I had a question about the whole thing with Cass Sledd. Now, I went back through your archives, and I was listening to your coverage, and it was good. How did the American troops get on the Egyptian border to stop the Gazans from coming in? And where can I go to verify that? Who was the one that initiated it?
Can
I go to verify it?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll have to look that up and post it at whatreallyhappened.com because I don't have that off the top of my head. But basically, it was, Israel came to some kind of an agreement with Egypt. And Egypt sort of acted like it was all their idea, and then it started getting really kind of tense, and so the U.S. sent in troops to back up Egypt so that Egypt is not risking having their own people killed in a border clash with Gaza, because the ordinary Egyptian people don't like Israel. They remember how Israel almost tricked the U.S. into nuking Cairo on the USS Liberty attack. And so Egypt's government has to be very, very careful about how much they get along with Israel without angering their own population, kind of the same thing our own Congress is having to deal with right now. So as far as the U.S. troops on that border, I'm going to have to hunt that down for you and put that up at whatreallyhappened.com in terms of a site.
Okay, because I was wondering where to check that out so I could see it. And the Egyptians need to stand up and take back their country, too.
Well, I think right now what we're seeing all across the world, we're seeing in Iceland, we're seeing in Greece, we're seeing the people of the world all stand up at the same time and say, you know something, this globalist system they're trying to impose on us, it doesn't work. This Western-style compound interest thing isn't working. This high finance reserve currency isn't working. And I think all the peoples of the world are starting to take their countries back.
Well, let's hope Egypt will do so, because they've been run by a real crook and a thief for the last 30 years, and...
Well, they shot the last good leader. I mean, that seems to be a pattern around the world. Yeah. I'm not saying he's any kind of an angel, but it seems like every time there's a leader who really wants to take care of the people, he winds up getting blown to little bloody bits. And, you know...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just had a question about that, because didn't he... Ever since he signed that peace treaty with Israel... Egypt's been giving away just doing things for Israel, not so much Egypt. Case in point, Hosni Mubarak signed a deal in 2005 where they practically give the natural gas to Israel. And
yes.
Egyptians are paying 50, 60 pounds a cylinder for it.
Yes.
So I guess I had a question about how great Mr. Sadat was. I mean, from the evidence to showing, it didn't look like he did him much of a favor, but that could be my perception of it.
Well, it's a very complex issue. We know that one of the reasons that Iran has always been in the crosshairs of Israel is while the Shah was in power, the pipelines from Iran, some of them went down through Israel onto the Mediterranean to a tanker terminal at Haifa. And part of the deal was that Israel just got to suck out whatever they needed. And as soon as the 1979 revolution occurred, the first thing the Ayatollahs did was they grabbed that valve on that pipeline to Israel and they shut it. And that's when Israel really started saying to the United States, you got to go kill the Iranians for us.
Really nice people there, aren't they?
Well, you know, they've got these cultural ideas about how everything is always supposed to be given to them because they've suffered so much in ancient times. And, yeah, if they could just learn to live in the 21st century and get along with their neighbors. I mean, this is a country that's still to this day, they're 60 years old. They still have not drawn their national borders. I mean, when you set up a country, the very first thing you normally do is you draw a line and say, this is my country, that's your country. And Israel still to this date refuses to do so.
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of people that have suffered even throughout all times. I mean, you got disabled people, a lot of the African nations.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm getting tired of this Ashkenazi USDA choice bovine excrement saying they're the only people that suffered. Their suffering is worse than everybody else's. I'm getting fed up with it.
Well, you know, I mean, this whole thing with the Armenian genocide, you know, the major lobbyists against recognizing it as a genocide, surprise, surprise, turns out to be Israel. Israel has founded their political support for what they're doing in Palestine and Gaza on this idea that they're the only ones that have ever been the victim of a major genocide in recent time. Yeah, it is. It's complete nonsense. You know, even if you concede the official Orthodox value of 6 million people lost in the slave labor camps, that's still only one-tenth of the entire deaths of World War II. And yet, we're not supposed to pay attention to those other 90%.
Which were disabled people. They were gypsies. They were Russians. They were pretty much whoever Hitler didn't like.
Yeah, the gays were in those slave labor camps and mentally defective people. Yeah, you're right. Everybody was in those camps, and they were slave labor camps. The vast majority of deaths that happened there were from typhus epidemics that ravaged Germany at the end of the war when their infrastructure started to break down. And we have had this constant political spin that it was a deliberate extermination program, and it was only against the Jewish people, and therefore we're supposed to turn a blind eye when Israel does the same thing to Palestine that Hitler did to Poland and France.
Yeah. Speaking of Palestine, we know about the storming of Jerusalem. I guess we'd have to maybe pray for the Palestinians and pray for them to come out of it all right and nothing seriously bad to go down over there.
Well, you know, at some point,
pray for a solution somewhere.
Yeah, pray for peace and all the rest of that. But the bottom line is Israel wants that Al-Aqsa Mosque to be gone because they're going to put the Fourth Temple there. All right, thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to let you go, Dee. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you got to have proof, just try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. And as long as our last caller got us onto the subject of Israel and Operation Cast Lead, it is amazing, a little bit funny, and also insulting to see this major public relations campaign that Israel is undertaking to rebrand itself, to try and polish its image in the world. And, of course, a great deal of controversy is over this, what's the name of it? It doesn't matter if it's small campaign or size doesn't matter campaign. That's it now. And, of course, Israel is saying this is the most successful PR campaign they've ever had. I don't think so. I'm not impressed by it. I think it's, frankly, a little silly. And but no doubt Israel's boosters in the media are going to say, yes, it's brilliant, it's amazing, it's a blockbuster, and it's colossal, and it's all the rest of that stuff. But it really comes across as a little bit silly. And, I mean, with the overt sexual references in this ad campaign, I know it's got to be you know, quite shocking and insulting to the Orthodox community, who take these things a little more seriously. But they're coming back and trying to basically say, you know, hey, we're great, we love peace, they had it coming, and so forth and so on. Meanwhile, now that we are a little over a year following the war crimes of Operation Cast Lead, a very tragic circumstance is unfolding in Gaza. The percentage of newborn babies with serious birth defects has skyrocketed in the last few months. These are babies who were conceived shortly before Operation Cast Lead. Their mothers were exposed to some of the materials in the weapons being deployed across Gaza, and now we're seeing a very apparent increase in these massive birth defects. And, of course, women who are still expecting, they're now living in absolute fear and horror. They don't know what they've got inside their bodies or what their babies are going to look like. And, you know, it's a tragic situation again. You know, these are innocent lives by any reasonable definition of the word. These little yet unborn babies. And they're born into a world, and they've got they're born into a place that's already, it's a horrible ghetto. I mean, Gaza, the living conditions there are worse than the worst of the Warsaw ghetto. And so, to be born into that circumstance to begin with, to be born into being a second-class citizen, to be constantly told by the guys with the guns that you are less than human and you got to go through the gates. And then on top of that, to have a serious birth defect that was caused by the weapons dropped on your parents. I mean, it just seems to get worse and worse and worse. But in the spirit of fair play, over there in Great Britain, Gordon Brown has announced that there is going to be a change in the law regarding political arrest warrants. Now, Great Britain, back when Milosevic was doing his thing, and there was a hue and cry about war crimes and torture around the world, Great Britain, along with many other nations, including Spain, passed laws saying that if The Hague issued arrest warrants for war crimes, or if there was a warrant anywhere in the world for an arrest for a war crime, that it could be carried out and executed on British soil. Well, now all of a sudden, it's Israel that is being accused of war crimes again. And Britain is doing this thing. And Gordon Brown is pushing for a law that will change how political arrest warrants are handled in Great Britain. And basically, it is a get-out-of-jail-free card for anybody from Israel. However, the move to change the law has met with such fierce outrage from the British people that they're going to delay actually doing it until after the elections. I don't think that's going to fool anybody, but that's the way they're playing politics. Gordon Brown knows that this is a move that is not supported by the British people, many of whom had family members who were the victims of war crimes during the last big mistake, and they remember what it's like. So, once again, we're seeing how the governments of the world have all become subverted by Israel. Oh, goody, we've got Karen on the phone from Oregon. Karen, welcome to the show. Bring us up to date on the national strike. What's going on?
Hi, Mike Rivera. Thank you very much. Well, we have now a grand total of 42 days, folks, 42 days. Mm-hmm. And the strike is really starting to come together as far as education goes. We're working very much on just letting people know what it means to be a patriot. As a matter of fact, I've worked a little bit more on the front page because a lot of people were kind of wondering about, well, strike sounds kind of harsh, but it's about a strike for freedom, folks. It's about what it means to be a patriot. And a definition of a patriot is a person who loves, supports, and defends his or her country and its interests with devotion. Two, a person who regards himself or herself as a defender, especially of individual rights against presumed interference by the federal government. Mike, what do you say? I think that pretty well fits what we need to be doing.
I think that definitely fits what we need to be doing, and I know that the word strike has numerous meanings, some of which are seen as somewhat violent, but this is the quintessential non-violent strike, because you're basically simply refusing to be part of the system. Nobody's attacking anything, nobody's shooting anybody, nobody's crashing planes into buildings. We are simply refusing to go along with the pretty printed pieces of paper, and we're going to have 4 days where we're going to spend our time talking to our friends and neighbors and saying, look, this system doesn't work for us any longer. Go back and read go ahead.
That's right. That's right. And also, Michael, have you gotten a chance yet to read the Articles of Freedom?
I have not. I'm going to make a point of getting to it tonight. I was really kind of busy this week with issues on our new server, but I am going to make a point of getting to it tonight. Can you call in our show tomorrow morning?
What time?
It's from 11 to 1 Central Time. And it's a different phone number. It's 800-259-9231. But 800. If you call in tomorrow, 800-259-9231, between 11 and 1, and I'll make a point of reading reading the Articles of Freedom tonight.
I'm still learning about them myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I'm like a lot of folks out there. I'm not really legally inclined at all. I know tyranny when I see it, but reading a bunch of legalese is beyond me. However, the more that I read and take the time to interpret these, so many of the issues that we have are totally covered. All the constitutional violations are covered. It gives remedies for this. It's an absolutely outstanding body of work. And so what we're doing now is figuring ways to focus on preparing for Patriots Day, because Patriots Day is April 19th. Now, that's mm-hmm. Monday, and that's when these Articles of Freedom are to be signed and served to our servant government.
Mm-hmm.
So the focus can be really learning, all of us learning what our rights are, what our Constitution is, and then paying really close attention to how our government responds. That's been the problem before. There have been petitions of redress that the government has just blown off, like they blow off court cases and say that we don't have standing.
Mm-hmm.
So this will just simplify and hopefully unify us to get the numbers on the petition and to participate during the strike days with educational programs that are still being under construction. But I have another great website for people to go to.
Which one is that?
Have you ever heard of StandUpAndSingForAmerica.org?
That's a very long name. I don't know who came up with that one, but that's a hard one to remember. StandUpAndSingForAmerica.org. I know my wife's going to like that one. She's a choir director.
She will love it. I love it. I am a singer as well, and I've got a link at the bottom of the front page, and it's mm-hmm. about all the patriotic songs and the feelings they engender. And just even looking at the words of the songs and all of the stanzas in you know, God Bless America and mm-hmm. all the America the Beautiful.
Okay, Karen, we got to take a break. Karen, we got to take a break. I'm sorry. The music means is we got to go out and sell some product here. But stay on the phone. I'm going to take you into the last segment of today's show and finish up with you on this subject. So don't go away. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Karen Tostado about the national strike, about a new petition of redress, Articles of Freedom going to the U.S. government during the strike here. And yes, they're going to ignore the petition. They're going to blow it off like they've blown all the others off, because in a nation with this much massive vote fraud, the government doesn't have to pay attention to petitions. So here's what we need to do. We need to not only get a lot of people sign this petition, because normally I don't bother with petitions for this very reason, but there's an opportunity here. We need to get as many people to sign the petition as possible, and then we need to promote the fact that the petition is being delivered to the government. The idea being that when the government simply chooses to ignore it, everybody will watch it happen. Up until now, the government has felt safe ignoring petitions and ignoring the courts and ignoring, everything else that's going on, because the media will never report it. And so the American people as a whole don't know the government is simply ignoring the rules. The Constitution,
exactly.
Yeah, the Constitution is the original contract with America. And we need to deliver this, you know, notice of redress to the government saying you're not playing by the rules. We demand that you do so. And we need to have everybody watching the government when we deliver it. So when the government basically says, well, we can't deal with this or we're not going to do anything, everyone comes to understand the government is the party that has broken the compact.
Exactly. And actually, voter fraud is covered in there, as are our Second Amendment rights. And all the violations, see, for about 15 years, Bob Schultz has been documenting all of the times that the government has basically blown him off and ignored him and refused to allow our petitions of redress to be heard. So, and also in this really wonderful document, and it does get a bit tedious, but folks, it's worth it at least to look over the first couple of pages, but it says, the background and statement of the facts is the founding documents of the United States clearly acknowledge that the powers of government are derived only from the consent of the governed. That's us, folks, and I don't know if there's anybody out there that's consenting to the ridiculous taxes, the bailouts. Those are also addressed in there. So if you want to learn more about the IRS, we need to support this, as well as Tom Cryer at truthattack.org, who's working on really focusing on that. We've got a lot of ways we can simplify and unify and stand as one. And that means our networking energy needs to reach out so that we're all on the same page and we know what it means to have our God-given rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and we're willing to protect those alongside of our neighbors and everyone in this country.
Okay, well, you know, we need to publicly call attention to the fact that the government is outside the rules. We have a saying around here that the fastest way to bring down a dictator is to force them to act like one where everybody can see it. And again, it's not going to take a huge amount of effort because the polls are telling the story. You know, 3/4 of Americans define themselves as very angry with the federal government. So, you know, support for the Congress is at an all-time low. Obama's poll numbers after just 1 year have plumbed the same depths that it took George W. Bush 8 years to get to. Everybody's angry. I don't know anybody who isn't getting a federal government paycheck that thinks this system works.
Well, and that's why there are over 300 million of us out there. We need at least 10% to sign these Articles of Freedom. And so during the 4 days of the strike, we will be having some good education going on, and hopefully we'll be able to get some music programs as well, because when you read the beautiful songs that are about our heritage and about our country, it even just without music brings chills to me, because it does stand for freedom, and we are a beacon in the world, and we must protect our rights and our country.
We have been a beacon. We can be a beacon again, but we need to basically clean up our own act before we presume to tell the rest of the world how to behave. We're not the moral leader in this world anymore. Not when we've got John Yoo up there saying it's okay to crush little kids' testicles in front of their parents to get them to talk. That's not moral leadership. That is ruled by terror.
No, that's absolutely horrible, and that's what we have to stop. We have to recognize that our soldiers are being turned into horrible people because the government tells them to do this stuff. And why do you think suicide rates are so high?
The suicide and the drug abuse and the rest of it, these young people understand they're the bad guys this time. They grew up with all the horrible stories about the bad old commies and the bad old Nazis. Now they're looking in the mirror and saying, wow, this time it's our turn. It doesn't sit very well with them. Karen, I'm going to let you go here. I've got two more stories I got to cover before the end of the show. Do call into tomorrow morning's show back here on GCN, okay?
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks an awful lot, Karen. We're going to let you go here. All right. I got one more story I want to talk about a little bit. I actually have people writing in and saying, are you going to cover this? All right. And the story is California considers tracking animal abusers like sex offenders. And basically what it is, the California state legislature, who apparently don't have anything more important to think about, are considering a new proposal to establish a computer registry of names, similar to the one used for sex offender databases, to track and make public the identities of people convicted of felony animal abuse. Now, I want to start off by telling you that I personally happen to like animals a lot. like dogs, like cats. I've had good experiences with animals out in the forest. I hunt with a telephoto lens. When I worked at Six Flags Magic Mountain, I made friends with this California timber wolf. I'm sorry, Canadian timber wolf. Everybody else thought this was a wild animal, and she was just a big puppy dog. And we just got along famously. I love animals, and I don't like people who abuse animals. Okay? But we need to remember our priorities. I mean, it's rather interesting. I wore this T-shirt on the show today. Those of you on Ustream can see it. It says, USA, where torture is legal, but cruelty to animals is a crime. And that really does underscore our priorities are messed up. We're torturing people. We're torturing children in front of the parents to get them to confess to crimes. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed confessed to 9/11 after the U.S. government put his kids in metal boxes with stinging insects and forced him to listen to the kids screaming and yelling and crying. What parent is not going to admit to planning and carrying out 9/11 in order to stop the screaming of their own children? And yet, our government is going to prove what a moral and upstanding and righteous nation we are by getting down on those animal abusers and making sure that you don't get to see a naked titty on TV anymore. Yes, we're moral. We don't show naked bodies on TV unless it's HBO really late at night. And it's all a fraud. It's all displacement. It's all compensation, if you will. I know there's a psychological term for it where, you know, at night you're chopping up people and killing them. So in the daytime you put on this very proper and moral demeanor to kind of compensate for it. And that's what's going on. Now, the bottom line is, and again, I don't like people who abuse animals. I think it's wrong. But California doesn't have the money for this. California doesn't have money for their schools to teach human children. They don't have money for this new registry. This is an election year stunt by the legislators who are introducing this legislation so they can go back to their district and say, oh, see, I introduced this legislation, you know, to get on top of the animal abusers. And I'm not saying animal abusers should be excused. But shouldn't we be tracking child abusers before we track animal abusers? Shouldn't we have a database of everybody who took part in the torture of innocent people and have their names made public so we know when they move into our neighborhoods? I'm far more worried about somebody who's conversant with waterboarding living next to me than somebody who may have abused a puppy dog somewhere in the past. Where are our priorities here with this? It's like that story we did earlier in the week where, and I'm forgetting exactly where this was taking place, but the police officers in this town, who apparently have got no real crimes to deal with, are dressing up like homeless people and begging for change for cars at left turn lanes. And what they do is they spot people not wearing the seat belts, notify the cops down the road to pull them over and write them a $200 ticket. Meanwhile, the robberies and rapes and all the rest of it continue apace. That's how crazy it is in this country right now. It feels to me like the system really is on the verge of a complete collapse. It's just looking for that initiating event to trigger the cascade. All right. All right, that's it for our Friday. Have a happy Powhana Friday, and we're going to call it quits here. We'll be back tomorrow with Karen Tostado and the National Strike at 11 a.m. Central Time here on the Genesis Communication Network. Until then, stay safe, stay well, stay angry, stay skeptical. Don't believe a thing anybody tells you without checking it out for yourself. That includes me. And we'll be back tomorrow morning. Aloha, America.